Comics for Beginners Podcast, Episode 25. Periscope Studios with Steve Lieber. Hello and welcome. My name is Pelle Schmidt. I am the artist on the current monthly series by Chris Miscavige, written by Chris Miscavige and published by Boom Studios, called Thomas Alsop. This podcast is not about Thomas Alsop, but I do feel that I want to talk about that a little bit. I was just in San Diego for the craziness known as Comic-Con or SDCC 2014. To promote the book that we actually pitched last year at Comic-Con, and this year we have two issues on the shelf. That was an interesting experience. It was nice to meet also the editors who work on the book that we've only previously met over email and Skype and things like that. So that was great. It went really well. I was on two panels. I had a great time there. And Thomas Alsop was received extremely well by the public. I have a couple of reviews. We have a ton of reviews actually on the web on thomasalsop.com/press. But I'm just going to read a couple of them, just because I'm just blown away by the love this book is getting. Here's one from Bleeding Cool that say, Schmidt's storytelling is superb, and he uses both shading and especially coloring to great effect. Each moment has its own distinct feel, and he manages to pull the reader immediately into different times and realms with deceptive ease. His art is almost impressionistic in places, and he always effectively conveys the mood of the moment. Oh, that's nice. Thank you, Bleeding Cool. And let's find another one. Oh, Fangirl Nation writes, writer Chris Miscavige knows how to tell a story and keep an audience connected. Thomas Alsop is rude, but also a wounded enough character to be endearing. Pelle Schmidt continues to wow me with his watercolor style, casting an ethereal glow on everything in this comic. I hope I pronounced that right. Ethereal? Ethereal? I don't know. But yeah, we're getting a lot of great reviews, and if you want to read more, go to thomasalsop.com/press. I am still in the U.S. I'm up here in Portland, Oregon, where I'm working out of Periscope Studios, where something like 26 people come and go, artists, writers, people making comics. It's a great environment to be in. And obviously everyone here is really busy and working really hard. I've found a quiet corner here to record this podcast. But what I really want to share with you is the interview I did with Steve Lieber the other day. I managed to lure him away from his drawing table for a little chat on the studio environment and why it's a great idea to be part of one. So here's the interview with Steve. I'm here at Periscope Studio in Portland, Oregon, a comics hub, if there ever was one. There's about 26 members coming and going at odd times here at the studio, and I'm here with one of the founders of the studio, Steve Lieber. So tell us a little bit about how it all got started.
In 2001, 2002, a whole lot of the local artists were meeting regularly for coffee. Once a week, we'd get together at a local cafe, show each other our work, talk industry news and gossip with each other, complain about our editors, all the usual things that freelancers do. And sometimes people would bring along work to work on, you know, just to be around others and get away from the isolation of being in a studio by yourself. Some of the people had been in studios before. There had been another collective studio here in Portland that had broken up over various personal issues. And we had a pretty good sense that there was an interest in forming a new one. So emails started flying around, invitations went out. And we wound up all getting together at Carl Kiesel's house. Carl's a local writer and an artist. He's very famous in the American comics industry. And we just started kind of hammering out the details of what we'd like to do with the studio, a sense for what the place would be for, what we'd want out of it. And most importantly, we figured out, we added up what everybody said that they'd like to pay, what they could afford to pay on the margins, and that gave us a sense for how much we could afford to spend for rent. We took a vote on if this sounded like a good idea. It did. A couple of people volunteered to hunt around town looking for a likely space. We found one, and a few weeks later, we were all moving desks into an office space in downtown Portland. There were originally 11 people. A few of them, or one dropped out almost immediately, so we were very quickly down to 10. But we built really, really effectively from there, and we've gone from those initial 10 people to 26 over, I guess it's been 12 years now. And the studio's grown from just being a place outside the house for people to work to being something, it's not quite a business, but well, we are an LLC now. Companies can hire the studio in addition to hiring the individuals in the studio. There's a lot of shared resources. And it's become something that I think works really well for the cartoonists here in Portland.
Excellent. And so you said you build really well. I mean, you built people. You got people in. Do you have a screening process for how you get members?
Yeah. When it looks like there's an opening, we start inviting people to hang out. The biggest consideration, aside from, you know, are you a working artist, do you have a career, are you not just a dabbler, is are you someone that everybody feels good about spending 8 hours a day with? And we find that by knowing people, knowing them from conventions, from just the social life of the city. And we'll have people come by and just hang out and work for a couple of days. And if that works, if that seems to work out, there's a lot of emails fly back and forth, and votes are taken. And if it works out, then the person is invited for a 3-month trial membership.
Mm. Okay. So you said votes are taken also for if you want a new refrigerator or a copy machine or whatnot, you take votes on those things?
Ideally, every 3 months we get together and have as short a meeting as possible. We really try not to burden people with this stuff. But for any sort of big decision that has an impact on everybody, we'll hold a vote for it. One of our biggest mistakes as a studio, actually, was we took a very long time to set up a procedure for voting. That's a difficult thing with an ongoing organization, to figure out how you make decisions. I recommend that if anybody out there is making a studio, to make one of your first decisions, how do we make decisions? Is it majority rule? Does everything have to be unanimous? Mm-hmm. Is there a percentage that things have to go by? How do you decide how long people have to vote? It doesn't take very long to figure this stuff out. But it's a lot better to do that in the beginning than to have to vote on how you vote. And then you can see how that one could just slip into infinity right there. I think we run a lot more smoothly now that we know how we make decisions.
Right. So 26 members, that's a lot of people to have to agree on whether to buy a new photocopier or whatnot. How do you do that in practicality?
For the most part, people tend to. I wind up making a lot of the financial decisions myself because I'm the guy who does the bookkeeping, and the bank account is in my name. For a long time it was on my Social Security number, but now that we're an LLC, it's a separate thing.
Okay.
For any expenditure over a couple $100, I'll make sure that everybody's on board with it, and generally people are. We raise funds from a couple of different places. We set up our rent so that we're collecting more than we spend every month, so that there's always a little bit of a cushion coming in. We have an Etsy store where every once in a while people will kick over a signed book or some prints or some original art or sketches or sketch cards or something. And the proceeds from that go into the studio general fund. And also, sometimes the studio will take on a group job, like someone will hire the whole studio for a big storyboard project or a commercial art project, and you know, everybody will get paid, but we'll keep a reserve from that that goes just to the studio general fund, and that'll go to buy us a new computer or a new printer or a ton of printer ink or something like that.
Right. Yeah, I was just about to ask you about the economics behind all this, because people can be at different levels when they start at a studio. Some might not have a steady stream of income, and others might not be so worried about buying a new refrigerator. So how do you differentiate between that? And how, you said you have a cushion fund, which sounds like a really good idea. But what if people drop out, and how fast do you have to fill the space again and stuff like that?
Reasonably quickly, although we've always set things up so that we have three levels of membership. The lowest is called a float, and that person is paying a pretty low rate for the right to come in anytime they want to just use whatever desk happens to be empty at the time.
Yeah.
For the upper two rates, they're paying for a space that's their own.
Yeah.
And people regularly go up and down in types of membership.
Okay.
If their career is going well, they're expected to move up and pay more. If things aren't going so well, there's no problem with them paying less. And because everyone realizes that the health of the collective is good for them too, mm-hmm. People tend to pay what they're capable of. Even our highest rates aren't that expensive, so it's all a very good deal.
Right. And what's good for the collective is good for the individual. You say I of course have my own thoughts on this, but I'm curious to hear yours about what are some of the immediate advantages of joining and or starting a studio.
Well, it took a long time for folks to decide to come to the realization that is the truth, or for mm-hmm. you know, for it to be proved to people that that's the case, that what's good for my studio mates is good for me too. And the way it plays out is as people's careers advance, they get more job offers than they can handle, and they can usually pass it off to somebody else in the studio. You know, we all know what each other's work is like. We've got a pretty good sense of what everybody's working on. So if I get an offer that I just don't have time for, I usually know who else in the studio is looking for work, and if one of them is right for the job, I'll steer towards them.
Right.
And they'll do the same for me.
Yeah.
One of the greatest pains in the world for any freelancer is having to say no to a job offer. It's agonizing. Having a bunch of studio mates around usually means that we don't have to say no. We just say, I can't take this time, but you can talk to my friend about this, and
right.
he can take it, or we can do it together. There's a lot of impromptu collaborations on commercial jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that more offers keep coming in, because editors and art directors think of us as someone who, when you call them, you get a yes. That makes a big difference.
Sure.
Other advantages are that we've got a really broad knowledge base among the 26 people here. If one person learns a cool trick in Photoshop or Manga Studio,
yeah.
by the next week, everybody knows that cool trick. if a job comes in and you're not sure how to price it or whether you can do that sort of work or not, the odds are very good that somebody in the studio knows about that and can answer your question. You've got the working knowledge of 26 commercial artists instead of just what's in your own head.
Right.
We've got shared resources, which are really nice. We, you know, I think long before any of us could have afforded a Cintiq or would have been willing to lay out the $2,000 for one, the studio was able to get one, and everyone was able to test drive it, and eventually, of course, we all wound up getting our own because you can't be a commercial artist without one, it seems. But you know, being able to share resources like that, high end printers and big scanners. Mm. It makes a difference.
Yeah, yeah. But there are also hassles involved, right? With you have to keep the books and you have to deal with other people's half empty coffee cups and trash and all these practical things. What are some of the downsides?
It could be a lot like having a college roommate. you know, there's a whole lot of artists in crammed into not a small space, but we're all working pretty close together, so people have to make an effort to police their stuff and not let their mess spread into somebody else's area, to remember to do their own dishes, and when they don't, usually somebody else steps in to take care of things that fall apart just by virtue of having a bunch of people in them. I don't think there's an office anywhere in the world that isn't full of food that's been left to rot because people forget about it and then nobody knows who it belongs to. So, because we're a reasonably responsible group of adults, somebody usually steps in to take care of these things. I spend a lot of time doing the bookkeeping, and I don't mind it. I was a business major before I was a cartoonist, so it's a little bit of fun time with the spreadsheet for me. and just keeping track of we spent $3 on a package of paper in September and entering all that stupid stuff.
I'm going to send you my books.
Oh, excellent! That's good. We've actually hired a professional bookkeeper this year, which oddly enough hasn't saved me any work at all. But I think my taxes will look better, be much more neatly typed next year.
Right. and questions like that about how do I file my taxes and can I be reimbursed for this or that, or that's things you could use your studio mates for, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I talked about how the exchange of knowledge is a big valuable part of things, and that's been something that has been great for everybody here. The few people who are real nerds about these things and like knowing about the business have been able to share that information with the others.
Right.
There's one tax accountant who I think handles the business for half of the studio, because once you find one person who can deal with the weirdness that is a comic book artist's taxes, then you send business towards them.
Right.
The wife of one of our members is a very good lawyer, who represents freelancers and does contract law, and she now represents a whole bunch of us.
Right.
That's Katie Lane, who runs a blog with advice for freelancers.
Oh, that would be a good resource.
It's a very good resource. Work Made for Hire. If you Google that and Katie, I think you'll find it, or just Work Made for Hire blog.
I'll be sure to put a link in the show notes.
Excellent.
Why not just work out of your house in your robe and work all day and never have to deal with anybody else and never have to do the dishes?
I did that for 10 years. Sometimes it's great. There's times when I really like working in a room by myself and playing whatever music I like or podcast I like as loud as I want. But, you know, there's a reason that they punish prisoners by putting them in solitary. And people like being around other people. They, if they have something funny, they like being able to say it out loud and hearing people laugh. They like someone else talking to them. And this has been a great way for all of us to get out into the world and be around other artists and like-minded weirdos. Also, I really like having a whole bunch of professional eyes that I can show stuff to. If a panel just isn't quite working, but I can't figure out what it is, it's great being able to lean over 3 feet and put a page in front of Jesse Hamm and say, does this hand look weird? And yeah. Jesse will say, yeah, you've got the thumb coming out next to the pinky instead of the other side. I shoot photo reference. I really like working with models for my drawing. And ordinary people have no clue how to pose for a comics artist. Comics artists, on the other hand, are great at it. So when I've got 3 comics artists posing for a scene, I know I'm going to get a whole bunch of really interesting poses and gestures and expressions that will translate easily to line art. I like being in a room with the collected props of 26 artists instead of just what I'd be able to gather myself.
Right.
Between 3 or 4 of us, we've got a really good collection of plastic toy guns of various styles. I would not want to own 50 toy guns, but between all of us, it's practical, and we just have them here.
Right. And separating your home life from your work life can also be...
Knowing that that here is a place where I have to work, and here is a place where I don't have to work, makes such a huge difference. Yeah. For a while, working at home reminded me of when I was in school and I slept and studied and drew all in the same room, and it could feel like I was never leaving that room.
Right.
When I walk away from the studio, I know that I've left my work for the day. Now, as it turns out, I often do wind up working at home, but at least that it's 2 different spaces, and it feels like there's a break in between.
Yeah, yeah. So if people want to know more about Periscope, where do they go online, and where do they go to find out more about you?
I'm at stevelieber.com, but I'm most active on Twitter. I'm Steve_Lieber, and I'm sure you'll put a link in.
Sure.
For Periscope Studio, the Periscope Studio Twitter is great. That's just @Periscope Studio. Mm-hmm. We've also got a Tumblr, periscopestudio.tumblr.com, and the site itself is periscopestudio.com.
Okay, excellent. I will let you get back to work now, so thanks very much for your time.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. That was Steve Lieber. There was one question that I always ask people on this show that I forgot to ask Steve. And the question was, what's the one piece of advice you as a comics pro would give to an aspiring comics creator? And I managed to catch Steve later in the day and ask him that very question. And here's what he said.
Well, the rules keep changing for artists, but one thing that stays consistent is this. Here are your goals. You want to do good work, do a lot of it, and put it in front of as many eyeballs as you possibly can. And the techniques for that are going to constantly be changing. But there's social media and the web offers a ton of great ways to put your work out there for people to find. Use those tools. Use social media. Put your stuff in front of people so that they can find out just how good you are.
Excellent. Thank you. And join a studio. That would be my piece of advice to an aspiring comics creator. Having a peer group around you that sit down and work every day makes you want to do better. It does wonders for your productivity, and it's great to have people like Steve or others that you can just ask questions whenever you get hung up on something, which we do as comics creators. We worry, we whine, we doubt ourselves and whether we're good enough or whatnot. It's great to have someone that you can just ask sitting right next to you. So I certainly think that joining a studio would be a great idea. It certainly made my career. I don't think that I would be a freelance artist today if I hadn't joined Gimli Studios in Copenhagen back in 98. That was the interview with Steve Lieber. What else is there? Yeah, check out Thomas Alsop if you feel so inclined. If you do feel like it, I encourage you to get issues 1 and 2. They come together as a nice package, and I guarantee you, if you're not on board by the end of issue 2, you probably won't be. So get those 2 first issues and see if it's something for you. I think it's a great story. I'm really proud to be part of it, and I know where it goes. I've read the scripts all through to the end of this first arc, the first 8 issues, and it's a fantastic, powerful story. So check that out. Go to thomasalsop.com for more. That's thomasalsop.com. And check that out. And if you do decide to buy a copy, and if you are in Seattle, then I'm actually doing a signing there on the 20th. That's Wednesday the 20th in a store called Xanadu Comics. I'll put a link in the show notes, but I'll be there to sign issue 3, which comes out on the 20th of August 2014. So hope to see you there. If not, we'll catch you on the web. Thanks. Thanks for listening to the Comics for Beginners podcast. For tutorial videos and more hands-on tips on how to write and draw comics, go to comicsforbeginners.com.